Looking forward to Passover break. Hard to believe. Okay, little handout. So I thought we would do today is we're going to try to do the Rubaiyat. We've kind of hit a point in the reading, not in the semester, but in the reading, where there are just an amazing number of good poets for every week. So before now, we've been kind of able to concentrate a little bit on the most important or the best or the most intense or the most compelling of the poets in each week's reading, but it's getting a little bit harder. So what I thought we would do is I want to do, as I said before, the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, the Fitzgerald. It's really his poem, although it's also his translation. But it's a translation that is putting something together that wasn't put together in the original. What the Rubaiyat is plural for Rubai, and Rubai is the Persian name for a certain kind of stanza. So just the way Yeladim is plural for... No one remembers their Hebrew? Yeladim is plural for...
Children?
Yeah, but what's the singular? Yes, and in Hebrew that would be Yeled. So I am is the plural in Hebrew, and Rubaiyat is the plural in Persian. So the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam is the stanzas of Omar Khayyam, or stanzas that he wrote. Okay, but first go to page 375, and what I've distributed we're going to look at after we do the Rubaiyat, but I just want to tell you a little bit about it. But if you go to page 375, maybe Meredith's most famous short poem is the poem called Lucifer in Starlight. What's the first thing you notice about it? What is the first thing you noticed about it as you were doing the reading for this week? Okay, what's the first thing you notice about it?
The title.
All right, good one.
I mean, to me, it's the devil is in starlight.
Okay, so the devil illuminated by starlight. Okay, good. Maybe even before you noticed that it was on the right-hand page. But okay, you meant that seriously as the title, not just, yes, well, I had to read the poem, so I noticed the title. Otherwise, I couldn't have found the poem. All right, formally, what do you notice about the form?
That the last line doesn't rhyme.
Actually, it does. It rhymes with awe.
Oh, okay.
No, not with O, with awe. Oh, okay. No, just a joke.
Yeah,
just a joke.
It's sort of a sonnet.
It's a sonnet, pure and simple.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you saying it's sort of a sonnet because the last line looks so short?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a little
It depends. I mean, it's a sonnet of some kind, yes. But yeah, there are different kinds of sonnets.
Okay. And there's a particular kind of sonnet this is, which is the Petrarchan sonnet. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the rhyme scheme, it's A, B, B, A again, B, B, A. That is rose, fiend, screened, pose, those, leaned, careened, shows. So that's the octet of a Petrarchan sonnet. And then the sestet, you have a lot more variety in the sestet in the six lines that end a Petrarchan sonnet in the way the rhymes appear, but you still have to have the rhymes. So the sestet is C, D, E, E. Sorry, what am I saying? It is C, D, C, E, E, D. Okay, so everyone sees that? It is scars rhymes with stars. Sank rhymes with rank, and all rhymes with law. So that's a standard Petrarchan sonnet. As I say, probably Meredith's most famous short poem. possibly the thing that he's most famous for, but possibly not. He was a major Victorian novelist. And of the Victorian novelists, probably he and George Eliot were the best poets among the major Victorian novelists. He's a better poet than she is, which is saying a lot, but she's a far greater novelist than he is. So lots of people think of her as the greatest of Victorian novelists. It's kind of between her and Dickens, and they're vastly different from each other. No one thinks that of Meredith, but they do think that if you do Victorian novel, he's essential. He's an essential Victorian novelist. But he was also a really, really, really good poet. So we keep going around the room either clockwise or counterclockwise. So now I'm just going to go right down the middle. I'm going to think of, here, am I thinking of an odd number or an even number?
Odd.
Okay, you got it. So Lucifer and Starlight.
Sorry. On a starred night, Prince Lucifer uprose, tired of his dark dominion swung with me above the rolling ball and cloud part screened, where sinners hug their spectrum repose, or pray to his hot fit of pride for those. And now upon his western wing he leaned, now his huge bulk o'er Afric's sands careened, now the black planet shadowed Arctic snows, soaring through wider zones that pricked his scars with memories of the old revolt of Fremaw. He reached a middle height, and at the stars, which are the brain of heaven, he looked and sank. Around the ancient track marched rank on rank, the army of our culture with law.
Great, thank you. That was beautifully read. Thank you. Okay, so Quinn, remind us again, who is Lucifer? The devil. Anyone know what his name means?
Something was light.
Yes.
So light bringer, because Lucha is light.
Right.
Yeah.
And fair, like in fairy?
To carry.
To carry. So Lucifer is the light carrier. So famous verse from Isaiah. How art thou fallen? Is this familiar to anyone? Lucifer, son of the morning. So Lucifer, the light bearer, you may think that that's an odd name to call Satan. Anyone know what Satan means? It's an Aramaic word, actually. Comes up in Paradise Lost what it means. It means adversary. So Satan is a description of the devil, who is the adversary of all of us. That's how he first appears in Job. He is the adversary of human beings. Do people know about this? This is a little background. That God is feeling really good about himself and says, things were really pretty good. Then he sees the adversary who belongs to his court and who is like do you know the phrase devil's advocate?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what it means?
It's the person in the Catholic Church who argues on behalf of the devil when they're initiating a new pope, right?
Or a new saint, actually.
A new saint.
Yeah, so if you want to make someone a saint, there is someone who is given the assignment of being the prosecutor against this person, trying to give you reasons not to. So that figure is called the devil's advocate. And it's not that they're an evil figure, it's that you want to make sure that there are no surprises, like that Mother Teresa did mercy killing kind of thing, which turned out to be an unpleasant surprise for the Catholic Church. Sorry, did you not know that?
No, I knew that.
Okay. So that could be disappointing. So Satan in the book of Job is basically, he's the one who's saying to God, look at all these sinners. They're really bad. And God says, yeah, but look at Job. He's really good. And Satan says, well, of course he's good. You're treating him really, really well. But if you treated him badly, he would curse you. And so God says, I don't think so. Let's make a little bet. So they make a little bet, and then Satan does terrible things to Job, but doesn't kill him because God forbids him from doing that. But he's Job's adversary. That's the point. He is cynical. He is someone who is not going to be taken in by human beings. He is like the, I have a certain professor in mind here who will not give people incompletes. Making sure that people are not gaming the system. That's what Satan originally means. He who will prevent anyone from gaming God's system. So then he came to be regarded as the Prince of Darkness, the fallen angel. He falls because he refuses to serve God. That's a New Testament idea of Satan. That's not what you get in the Hebrew Bible. But those connections are made, and they're partly made through a little parable that Isaiah gives, which is that Lucifer, the most beautiful star, the morning star, so Lucifer is also Lucifer, son of the morning, which means Lucifer is another name for what in the Roman terminology, the morning star. Do people know what the morning star is? Venus. So in Roman mythology, that is Venus. Also the evening star, but never both at the same time. This is basic astronomy that was known all the way back to, I think, to the Sumerians. that you never see Venus and as the morning star and Venus as the evening star at the same time. Not relevant here, but relevant to a lot of poetry. Relevant to the Intimations Ode. The youth wants to see the same star at night that he's attended by in the morning. The soul that rises with us, our life star, hath had elsewhere its setting. So that's important for interpreting the Intimations Ode by Wordsworth. Okay, so the morning star rises just before dawn. The astronomy of this is interesting enough, which is that Venus is between us and the sun. So if you're looking in the direction of Venus, you are looking roughly in the direction of the sun. If you're looking in the direction of Jupiter or Mars or any of the outer planets, you're looking away from the sun. But if you're looking in the direction of Venus, you're going to be within 15 or 20 degrees of looking at the sun. So if Venus rises, the sun is only 15 or 20 degrees away from it, and it's going to rise too shortly thereafter. Venus, as the evening star, is setting shortly after the sun sets, because it's always close to the sun. So Lucifer, the light-bearing star in Isaiah's parable, thinks, I'm so bright, I'm so beautiful, I am this beautiful heavenly body that rises at dawn, or rises before dawn, and Isaiah calls it the sun of the morning. But the point is, it is the sun of the morning because the sun itself, the real sun, is going to rise shortly afterwards. And then you won't see Lucifer anymore. So Lucifer's pride in thinking of itself as the most gorgeous thing in heaven is soon to be deflated. That's Isaiah's little parable. It's a two-verse parable in Isaiah. It has nothing to do with fallen angels. It's just a parable of, oh, that morning star thinks it's so cool. It's not, because the sun's about to rise. And then the Christian mythology turned that into Satan, the fallen angel who fell out of pride. So there's a little parable about pride in Isaiah that turns into a mythology about Lucifer, the devil, and that is sort of, or originally, what Meredith is picking up on. So the other thing to know, and I don't remember if anyone has said this before, but I was curious about it for different reasons, is that this poem was written in 1883. In 1882, there was a transit of Venus So do people know what that is, what that phrase means, transit of Venus? So it's something that was essentially only known about after the 18th century when telescopes got good enough and astronomy got good enough to see it. Have you ever heard the phrase? Is that a familiar phrase? Transit of Venus? Okay, it's a novel by Shirley Hazzard is one place where it's a famous title. Shirley Hazzard, she died a few years ago, amazing near-contemporary novelist. It is a major issue in Thomas Pynchon's best novel, in my humble opinion, Mason and Dixon. Because Mason and Dixon, who did the Mason-Dixon line, which is the line that separates Maryland from Pennsylvania, they surveyed it. They were astronomers and surveyors, and they first met each other when they were observing a transit of Venus in the 18th century. So the transit of Venus occurs every 112 years. I know you're still wondering what it is, but it occurs twice every 112 years. It occurs and then it occurs again 6 years later. So when you were like assuming you're about 20 now, then when you were 9, and then again when you were about 15, you missed the transits of Venus that were observed then. Do you remember it?
No, I'm just
sad. Oh, you're
sad.
Just sad? Yeah, and
well, I know that there was a major solar eclipse on May 16th.
Yeah, so the transit of Venus is not as cool as a solar eclipse. But just two little interesting things about this. See how we're trying to rush through these great poems? But two interesting things about transit of Venus. Emily Dickinson's brother-in-law was an astronomer, and he actually went to look at the transit of Venus. He was at Amherst College. He went to observe and take pictures of the transit of Venus. And in the meantime, his wife then had an affair with someone else, which is a major thing in her biography and in some of her poetry, because he was off photographing the transit of Venus. Okay, the transit of Venus is like an eclipse, except it's Venus rather than the moon that comes between the Earth and the Sun. And Venus is tiny. If you've ever looked at it in the evening sky or in the morning sky, you know, it's a bright star. It's a very bright for a star, but not like the moon. You know, it's a pinpoint. But when it crosses the face of the sun, you can see it crossing the face of the sun if you have the right equipment. And it's just this little black dot that takes about an hour and a half to cross the sun. And it is really helpful to look at the transit of Venus to do some astronomical calculation, like exactly how far away Venus is. And so the observations of transit of Venus, astronomers get really into it. And Dickinson's brother-in-law took pictures of Venus as it did the transit. This is the first time there were cameras existed. First transit of Venus that could be taken pictures of. First time cameras existed. And so he has, I don't know, something like 35 or 40 pictures of Venus going across the sun. And those now, you can find them on YouTube, turned into a movie. So you can watch his observation of the transit of Venus, just made frame by frame into a video. And that actually now counts, even though he didn't mean it as a video, that counts as the earliest video, earliest movie ever made. So that was the 1882 transit of Venus. The transit of Venus also occurred, therefore, a year before Meredith wrote this poem. And he is thinking of it, I believe, in the poem. So that's just a little cool background, also partly about science versus poetic metaphor, poetic meaning that we've been talking about throughout the Victorian era. Okay, so it's a starry night and Lucifer rises up. So is it dawn if he's rising on a starred night? So it would seem. It must be very late in the night. Tired of his dark dominion, swung the fiend above the rolling ball in cloud part screen. So what rolling ball is that? Sorry?
The earth.
The earth, yeah. In cloud part screened. So notice that those lines can mean that the planet arose in the east. On a starred night, Prince Lucifer uprose, the way the sun rises up. The uprise of the sun. Here it's Lucifer that uprose. Tired of his dark dominion, swung the fiend above the rolling ball in cloud part screened. Which ball? The earth. And what happens on the earth? It's the place where sinners hugged their specter of repose. So who are these sinners hugging their specter of repose?
Humans.
Say again?
Mankind.
Yes, humans. Yeah. So above the earth where sinners at night are hugging, what does specter mean?
Ghost.
Yeah, ghost. The best we can get. So we're all anxious. We're all semi-insomniac. We're all sinners. And so it's night and we are hugging, not true repose, but the specter of repose, the ghost of repose. So it's a description, and you'll see this in Modern Love also, of human sleep as what we want, but what we never quite get. We want repose. In sleep, we get the specter of repose. But there's always some edge of anxiety. At least that's what Meredith thinks. So here is the fiend, Lucifer, rising in starlight. That's the title, Lucifer in Starlight. Going above the rolling ball where we hug our specter of repose. Poor prey to his hot fit of pride were those. So who is the prey to his hot fit of pride?
Sinners.
The sinners, yes. So now we get to the biblical idea of Lucifer. That is that he caused Adam and Eve to eat the fruit. He was the one who said, come by, come by. And they did. We are now the prey to his hot fit of pride. That's why repose is only a specter. And now upon his western wing he leaned. So he is rocketing towards the west. He rises, and now he's going westward. And now upon his western wing he leaned. Now his huge bulk o'er Afric's sands careened. Now the black planet shadowed Arctic snows. So why black planet? Well, that is the trend. Yeah.
Because that's how Venus appeared over the sun.
Exactly. So that's what makes me think this is about the transit of Venus. That Venus, not as the brightest planet, the fairest planet, Shelley talks about how at dawn, veil by veil, the silent splendor drops of crystallite from that fair planet. So here, the only time I think you'll ever see in poetry up to this moment where Venus is described as a black planet, but that is because I think you're right, Red, the transit of Venus. Soaring through wider zones that pricked his scars with memory of the old revolt from awe. So this is Lucifer, Satan again, the devil, scarred from his battle with God. What great English poem describes that war of Satan against God?
Milton?
Paradise Lost, where deep scars entrench his forehead, says Milton. So here he is, going through these zones that pricked his scars with memory of the old revolt from awe. Who is awe? Yeah. God is a pure abstraction, you could say. God as not even the awesome, but awe itself. So the old, with memory of the old revolt from awe, he reached a middle height, and at the stars which are the brain of heaven, he looked and sank. So Venus rises, reaches a middle height, and sets. He looked and sank. Around the ancient track marched, rank on rank, the army of unalterable law. So the army of unalterable law, you could say, is what astronomy discovers. That is the rules of the apparent motion of heavenly bodies. And the idea of individual initiative, all of that is overwhelmed by the army of unalterable law. So again, you can see it as both an amazing connection between a scientific astronomy and Christian and Roman and Greek mythology, or you can see it as one or the other of those two stories. But this is, if you see it as a vision of God, the vision of God that it's giving you is really sublime, and sublime in a way that has to do with God's being the law of nature itself, the law that is the law of the universe. And that is Dante's view of God. There's a lot of Dante's Paradiso in this as well. So I'll just say that as a footnote to a footnote. But it's a really powerful poem. On a starred night, Prince Lucifer uprose, tired of his dark dominion, swung the fiend above the rolling ball in cloud parts screened where sinners hugged their specter of repose. Poor Prades' hot fit of pride were those, and now upon his western wing he leaned. Now his huge bulk o'er Afric's sands careened. Now the black planet shadowed Arctic snows. I should tell you that the phrase huge bulk is also from Paradise Lost, and it describes Satan. But Satan lying on the burning lake, not Satan flying. In bulk as huge, says Milton, as whom the ancients call Leviathan, which is the book of Job. Soaring through wider zones that pricked his scars with memory of the old revolt from awe, he reached a middle height, and at the stars, which are the brain of heaven, he looked and sank. Around the ancient track marched rank on rank the army of unalterable law. And one thing that you might be expecting, I think it was really interesting that Leon didn't see the rhyme, is scars, all stars, and then some other all rhyme. That is that you're expecting this to, he looked and saw is something like what you're expecting. But no, he doesn't even get to do that. He looked and sank. And then the rhyme is the law of the rhyme scheme of the sonnet and not the law that Lucifer is trying to set up himself, which would be he looked and saw. So do you hear that? I'm not, you know, it's a subtle thing to hear, and you have to be as obsessed with rhyme as I am, maybe. But soaring through wider zones that pricked his scars with memory of the old revolt from awe, he reached a middle height, and at the stars, which are the brain of heaven, he looked and saw. That's kind of what you're expecting. But no, it's, and at the stars, which are the brain of heaven, he looked and sank. Comes as a surprise, because he's sinking. Around the ancient track marched rank on rank the army of unalterable law, completely indifferent to him. So the rhymes all hit, but not where he is aiming for them to hit. He can't get into sync with them. He can't get into sync, so he sank. Okay, that's not in Meredith's mind. So what I distributed for you, is this a familiar picture? Have people seen this? It's a very famous Pre-Raphaelite painting. If you... okay, well, it's called The Death of Chatterton. And there's a Wikipedia entry on just the death of Chatterton, not only on Chatterton. Do you remember Wordsworth talking about Chatterton? Either of you?
Stop looking at me. He's the romanticist.
I know, but aren't you? Didn't you do Resolution of Independence?
Oh, I've studied it, but yeah.
All right. Do you remember Chatterton?
I know very little about Wordsworth.
Okay. I thought of Chatterton, that marvelous boy. So Chatterton was an 18th century poet who was really pretty great and desperately poor, and wrote some amazing poems, which are still anthologized, and committed suicide at the age of 17. So he is like... the youngest remembered poet in English literature. So that's why Wordsworth calls him that marvelous boy. I thought of Chatterton, that marvelous boy. And people were obsessed with him, and with good reason. So he became someone that... Pre-Raphaelites were interested in. And the painter, a minor Pre-Raphaelite painter named Henry Wallace, painted this very famous painting, his only famous painting, which is called The Death of Chatterton. And so what you can see, I don't know how well you can see it here, but he's taken poison. You can see it, you can see at the very bottom the beaker that he's taken it from. And he's lying there dead by an open window in this attic. And you can see some of his manuscripts that are kind of crumpled up next to this chest. So Henry Wallace painted this painting in 1856. And the model for the painting is George Meredith. So this is a painting of George Meredith at the age of 28, who is modeling the dead Chatterton, who died at 17. And Henry Wallace painted this painting. And 2 years later, Meredith's wife, Mary Ellen Nichols, who was, I mentioned before, Thomas Love Peacock, and we didn't look at the poem. There is a poem by Thomas Love Peacock in this anthology, but we didn't look at it. But he and Percy Bysshe Shelley were very close friends, but had opposite views of poetry. And Shelley's great, great essay, The Defense of Poetry, was a defense of poetry written against an essay by Peacock called The Four Ages of Poetry, where he says, poetry is over. We now... It's late Victorian times, or it's early. It's actually not Victorian times yet at all. But it's the 19th century, and from now on it's going to be ChatGPT all the way, or the equivalent. And Shelley responded with The Defense of Poetry. So Mary Ellen Nichols was Chatterton's daughter. Peacock's daughter. And she had... she was 6 years older than Peacock. She had a first husband who died shortly after they were married. And then she and Meredith got together. And Wallace did the... And Meredith was friends with Wallace, and Wallace did this painting. And then she dumped Meredith for Wallace. So the painter who painted this painting, Meredith's wife dumped him for the painter, for Wallace. And he then wrote Modern Love, the sonnet sequence, some of which you read, after she died. So she died 3 years later. After she died, he wrote Modern Love about that experience. So that's a little context. Interesting because of who the players are in it. It's not just, yeah, he was involved with someone and she got interested in someone else. But the whole relationship among all of them, the hothouse atmosphere of that, is a little bit of interesting context for that. So we will look at Modern Love, and you'll see on the other side, I gave you two more sonnets that are not in the selection that Rick's did. Partly because you can't really tell the plot from Modern Love, like Amour de Voyage, really is a novel in sonnets. Also, like some other sonnet sequences in English, most famously Astrophil and Stella by Philip Sidney. It is a novel in sonnets where you can see, and what's really interesting to see, is the difference between what the novelist wants you to understand about the sonneteer and what the sonneteer thinks about him or herself. So it's in the same mode as My Last Duchess. That is, the speaker of these sonnets, he's not nearly as horrible as Ferrara in My Last Duchess. Remember, he's murdered her in order to marry someone else and get her dowry. This speaker is not nearly as horrible, but he is a person who feels betrayed. But it's not impossible to see the extent to which Meredith understands him to be scapegoating the other woman. And not impossible to see the extent to which the speaker of the sonnets is avoiding a kind of self-knowledge. So it's really, really interesting that way. And hopefully we'll have a little time, but let's now go look at the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, which are much easier and much more fun. So let me just, I want to read you a couple of things that Fitzgerald said. This is the one thing that he's known for. He wrote other poems, but this is the one thing that he's known for. So his summary of the poem, he wrote to Tennyson, who was a very close friend of his. And what he did was, Tennyson said, so what's the moral? And he says, the moral is drink. For the moon will often come round to look for us in this garden and find us not. So, you don't live long. You should drink while you're alive. The moon's going to keep coming, but we're not going to be there. So drink, for the moon will often come round to look for us in this garden and find us not. In a preface, which Ricks doesn't give you, and which is nevertheless interesting, he writes, the original Rubaiyat, remember, that's plural. The original Rubaiyat are independent stanzas consisting each of four lines of equal, though varied, prosody. That is, they're not all iambic pentameter or whatever. Equal, though varied, prosody. Sometimes all rhyming, but oftener, as here attempted, the third line suspending the cadence by which the last atones with the former two. So what I was saying about Lucifer and Starlight, that is where you're expecting a rhyme and you don't get it. This is Fitzgerald, in Meredith, this is Fitzgerald talking about the effect of a Rubaiyat stanza, which is you get A-A-X-A is the usual rhyme scheme. So you get two rhymes, then you get an unrhymed line suspending the cadence. Where cadence, do people know what cadence means? Like in music?
Is it beat or pacing?
Yeah, but the word itself, that is what it means. And anyone know the phrase "one to count cadence"? Okay, so cadence is that's a military phrase for those who are doing the cadence for "I don't know, but I've been told." Air Force with Army wings are made of gold. I don't know, but it's been said. Air Force wings are made of lead. So if you're running to that beat, that's the cadence to which you're running to. But cadence literally means a fall. So cadence is things falling into place, is the meaning behind the meaning of cadence as beat. Keep the cadence or count the cadence. Things falling into place. So Fitzgerald is using it to mean that it's the rhyme falling into place. But the third line suspends the cadence. So you just don't get a rhyme where you're expecting it. But then the last line atones for that suspension, he says. And that it atones by rhyming with the first two lines. And so that's what Omar Khayyam, do people know who he was besides being in the title, The Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam? So he was a Persian astronomer. He was most famous as an astronomer, a major astronomer. So here's astronomy again. He was a Persian astronomer of the 11th and 12th century. His dates are 1048 to 1122. And is an important figure in Persian history. He was also a poet. He's not regarded as one of the great Persian poets, but the Rubaiyat, nevertheless, they were popular. And Fitzgerald translated them from the original. He knew Persian. He learned Persian and translated them from the original. So this is his original translation. The original Rubaiyat were just a bunch of four-line poems. But Fitzgerald, most of these are fairly accurate, but they're in Fitzgerald's ordering. And so they're ordered, the sequence is Fitzgerald rather than Omar Khayyam's. So that's just a thing to know. Okay, let's see how far we can get, and let's go counterclockwise again. So Sophia, just start at the first. These are easy.
Awake, for morning in the bowl of night has flung the stone that puts the stars to flight, and lo, the hunter of the east has caught the sultan's turret in a noose of light.
Great, so what's happened? Awake, why?
Because it's morning.
It's morning, yes. So the bowl of night would be? The sky, upside down bowl. And what's morning thrown into that upside down bowl? The sun, yeah, that would be the stone that puts the stars to flight. And lo, the hunter of the east, also the sun, has caught the sultan's turret in a noose of light. So now the hunter of the east, the sun, is casting its light on the sultan's turret in a noose of light, has lassoed it. So a good thing for an astronomer to notice, right? Okay, Sam.
Dreaming when dawn's left hand was in the sky. I heard a voice within the town of sky. Awake, my little ones, and fill a cup before life's liquor, and its cup be dry.
Okay, so he's asleep, and what does he hear?
A voice.
Saying what?
Get up.
Get the fuck up.
Yeah, get up and do what?
Drink.
Go to work? No.
Mm-hmm.
Drink.
Drink and be merry, you know?
Yeah.
Energy.
Yeah, it's morning. Time to get up and drink. So, good. I heard a voice within the tavern cry. And we keep going back to the tavern. Irina.
And as the cock crowed, those who stood before the tavern shouted, "Open the door. You know how little while we have to stay, and once departed may return no more."
Yeah, so it's like already 8 a.m. What's going on? Why isn't the tavern open yet? We're not going to live long. Open the darn tavern. Okay. Quinn.
Now the new year reviving old desires, the thoughtful soul to solitude retires, where the white hand of Moses on the bough puts out, and Jesus from the grounds aspires.
Okay, so what do you think the white hand of Moses is? blossoms. It's some Persian metaphor for blossoms, some Islamic metaphor for blossoms. Jesus also, in an Islamic metaphor, is breathing from the ground. So it's mist rising in the morning, blossoms on the bough. And the thoughtful soul goes into solitude. Okay, Leon?
I might butcher all these names.
That's okay.
Okay, Iran indeed is gone with all its rose. And
Jamshid's.
Jamshid's, okay. Seven-ringed cup where no one knows.
Has gone where no one knows.
Okay.
Good.
Okay. But still divine her ancient ruby yields, and still a garden by the water glows.
Okay, so figures from Persian mythology, but they're all gone. But the vine, her ancient ruby yields. So what vine would that be?
Perhaps a
grapevine from which we get
wine.
Yeah. So they're all gone, but there's still grapes growing on the vine. Good.
And David's lips are locked, but in divine high piping, with wine, red wine, the nightingale cries to the rose, that yellow cheek of hers, to incarnadine.
Yeah. So the nightingale is singing in Pahlavi, singing the words, this is the morning song of the nightingale, wine, red wine, and telling that the rose should turn her cheeks what color?
Red.
Do you know the most famous use of the word incarnadine in English?
No.
Macbeth.
Is it the seas?
Yes. Turning the green one red. Yeah. So, time to get up. Turn your cheeks red. Drink. Sophia.
Come, fill the cup, and in the fire of spring, the winter garment of repentance fling. The bird of time has but a little way to fly, and lo, the bird is on the wing.
Okay, so those last eight syllables in the fourth line are very famous. The bird is on the wing. You've all heard that, right? And you think it's a saying, but it's not. This is the invention of that phrase. So it's springtime. What should you do? Should you spend your time thinking about your sins?
No.
What should you do?
Get crunk.
Yeah. The winter garment of repentance fling, the bird of time has but a little way to fly. And then time is over, and lo, the bird is on the wing. Okay, Sam.
And look, a thousand blossoms with the day woke, and a thousand scattered into clay. And this first summer month that brings the rose shall take Jamshid and Kaikobad away.
Yeah, so roses are dying, roses are being born. Summer turned into clay. Summer blossoming. And this first summer month, eventually, they're going to take Jamshid. It's going to take Jamshid and Kaikobad away. Okay, Red.
But come with old Kayan and leave the lot of Kaikobad and Kaikosru for God. Let Rustum lay about him as he will. Of Hatim Tai Christ supper, heed them not.
Yeah, so he's not expecting, he knows what the references are, but he's not expecting his readers to know. The whole idea is, yes, there are all these important figures, and time takes them all away. And part of it is an idea of exoticism, which is a universal exoticism. Yeah, there are these figures, but heed them not, because what you should be doing is drinking. Arena.
With me along some strip of herbage thrown that just divides the desert from the zone, where the name of slave and sultan scarce is known, and pity Sultan Muhammad on his throne.
Okay, so what's the with me picking up from?
The come with old Kayam.
Right, so now it's picking up from stanza 9, but come with me. along some strip of herbage that is grass, strewn just where the desert and the sown part of the cultivated land is. Let's go where we can't think of the name of this name of slave or sultan, and we can pity the sultan. Pity Sultan Mahmud on his throne. Very famous, Quinn is 11.
Oh, here with a loaf of bread beneath the bough, a flask of wine, a book of verse, and thou beside me singing in the wilderness, and wilderness is paradise and now.
Okay, so is that familiar to people? A loaf of bread, a flask of wine, and thou? No, really? Okay. It's one of those things that you'll now hear. You'll now notice it. If you Google it, you know, you'll be able to get samplers that you can hang up in your kitchen. And it's one of the most famous verses. Not the absolute most famous, I don't think, but one of the three or four most famous verses from the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. And it's beautiful. All we need, a loaf of bread in a picnic beneath the bough, some wine, a book of verse, and you. That's all I need, singing in the wilderness beside me. And then wilderness is paradise, and now, what does that mean?
The world surrounding us becomes paradise.
Yeah, it's enough. That's all you need. With those things, that's paradise. Loaf of bread, flask of wine, book of verse, and you. And even in the wilderness, that's paradise. That's great. Leon?
How sweet is mortal sovereignty, think some. Others, how blessed the paradise to come. Ah, take the cash in hand and wave the rest. Oh, the brave music of a distant drum.
Okay, so what do some people think? The first group?
Sovereignty is great.
Yeah, yeah. Being president, that would be a good thing. I was cheated. So, yeah, so that would be someone power hungry. How sweet is mortal sovereignty? Or how sweet is mortal sovereignty? No, he would never be able to do it. So, but some think that. What do others think?
How blessed they look to the future.
Yeah, it's... you might have a hard life, but you're going to go to heaven forever, so that's what really matters, the paradise to come. What does he think? What does Omar Khayyam think?
Carpe diem.
Yeah, take the cash in hand, as opposed to what?
Saving it up, investing it.
Yeah, either for mortal sovereignty or for treasure in heaven. It's like, you got cash now, use it. Don't be ambitious for anything else. And then why is distant italicized?
To exaggerate like how the earlier two options.
Okay. And if you're going to hear the music of a martial campaign, that's what a drum would be. Is people attempting to conquer something, whether mortal sovereignty or the paradise to come. He says, yeah, that music is great as long as it's...
Far away,
yeah. Yeah, it's great as long as it's far away. Don't let it come near. So don't be ambitious. Julia.
Look to the rose that blows about us. Lo, laughing, she says, into the world I blow. At once the silken tassel of my purse tear and its treasure on the garden throw.
Okay, so the rose speaks and says, here I am. So it's not only carpe diem. Can you explain what that is? Do people know the phrase carpe diem? Mm-hmm. Everyone does? Okay. There's another trope which is similar to carpe diem called carpe florum. Which means, are you nodding?
Yeah, gather flowers.
Yeah, flowers. Gather ye rosebuds while ye may. Mm-hmm. So that's what the rose is saying. Grab the flower, seize the flower while you can. So it's a version of carpe diem. but the metaphor is more explicit. Okay, I'll do one since you haven't heard me reading it all today. The worldly hope men set their hearts upon turns ashes, or it prospers, and anon, like snow upon the desert's dusty face, lighting a little hour or two, is gone. So either you don't get what you hope, or you do, and what's the difference? Yeah, makes almost no difference. So working for something beyond the present is what these rubaiyat are against. Sophia.
And those who husbanded the golden grain, and those who flung it to the winds like rain, alike to no such orient earth are turned, as buried once men want to dug up again.
Okay, so any difference between those who husband the golden grain and those who fling it to the winds like rain? You think one is a smarter thing to do than the other? As far as your future goes?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Which is smarter?
To husband it. Yeah.
Does he think that?
No, nope.
Okay, so you're disagreeing with him. I got it. You think it's worthwhile working hard to get your degree, whereas he wouldn't. So I don't want this to corrupt you, and I'm glad it's not. But alike to aureate earth are turned. What does that mean? I mean, alike to no such aureate earth are turned. What would aureate earth be? Anyone know what metal has AU as its
gold?
Gold.
Yeah, so if it's gold, then earth's probably, and talking about green, he's probably talking about like fields, question mark?
Okay, well, it's the people who do. So there's the golden grain.
Yeah.
But the people who are either husbanding it or throwing it to the winds like rain aren't themselves turned to anything that anyone will want to harvest, will want to dig up. So, yeah, maybe you were smart and you were prudent and you husbanded your grain and other people just tossed it into the winds like rain, and you both meet the same end, which is no one cares about husbanding you, about harvesting you, because you're dead. So you're not turned to aureate earth, you're just turned to dust. Sam.
Think in this pattern, caravanserai.
All right, nice.
Those doorways are alternate night and day. Now sultan after sultan, with his pomp and mode, his hour or two, and went his way.
Good. So do people know what a caravanserai is?
I know what a caravan is.
Yeah, it's essentially the same thing. It's the caravan moving. So the sequence of vehicles in a caravan. And its doorways are alternate night and day. So night and day are passing, and sultan after sultan passes you, and then they just go away. So is being a sultan that great? Red.
They say the lion and the lizard keep the courts where Jamshid gloried and drank deep, and Bahram, that great hunter, the wild ass, stamps o'er his head, and he lies fast asleep.
So Jamshid, the great ruler, now he's dead, and the lion and the lizard are there. And Bahram, the great hunter, now the wild ass he might have hunted, is just stamping over his head. So what good did all that do? Irina.
I sometimes think that never blows so red the roses where some buried Caesar bled, that every hyacinth the garden wears brought in its lap from some once lovely head.
Yeah, so where do the flowers come from? They're replacing these people who thought they were great. The best that can come from their greatness are these beautiful flowers. Quinn.
And this delightful herb whose tender green pledges the river's lip on which we lean, I'll lean upon it lightly, for who knows from what once lovely lip it springs unseen.
Yeah. Okay, so dead people, yeah, give them a little respect. But again, it's just the beauty of the vegetation. Leon.
Okay. Ah, my beloved, fill the cup that clears. Today of past regrets and future fears. Tomorrow? Why, tomorrow I may be myself with yesterday's 7,000 years.
All right, so again, what should you be doing? It's not like he's changing his opinion very much as you go through this. And remember, these are all stanzas. The sequence that Fitzgerald is giving you is not Omar Khayyam's sequence. He has a reason for this sequence, but it's not a major one. That is, it's not one where there's going to be a major turning of understanding. Okay, so what should you be doing?
Lo,
semi-lo. Wait, no. Just 20, what should you be doing? Just quick paraphrase.
Just fill the cup.
Yeah, fill the cup, because today's the only day that exists. Fill the cup that clears today of any regrets you have for the past, any fears you have of the future. Mm-hmm. Just drink, and your regrets will go away, and your fears will go away, which is great. I know you're not all 21, so you may not know about drinking. But do that. So someone says, yeah, what about tomorrow? And what's his answer? Tomorrow? Well, why?
I could die tomorrow.
Yeah, I might be with the 7,000 years since the creation of the world, with all the dead who have died in the 7,000 years since creation of the world. So today is all that matters. Okay, Julia.
Lo, some we love, the loveliest and best, that time and fate of all their vintage crest have drunk their cup a round or two before, and one by one crept silently to rest.
Okay, so even people are wine. Some we loved, the loveliest and best, produced by time and fate as a kind of wine. They drank, and then they crept silently to rest. And we, that now make merry in the room they left, and we whom summer dresses in new bloom, ourselves must we beneath the couch of earth descend, ourselves to make a couch for whom? So right now we're on the couch of earth and we're dressed in the new bloom of summer, and then we'll turn into earth and become a couch for others. For whom? Now, one implicit answer to this is for people 700 years in the future, like Edward Fitzgerald and Alfred Lord Tennyson. That is, so these are poems saying, seize the day, seize the flower, written 700 years earlier. And the very fact that it's written 700 years earlier is saying, value the present. Okay, 23, Sophia?
Make the most of what we may yet spend before we too into the dusk descent. Dust into dust and under dust to lie. Sans wine, sans song, sans singer, and sans end.
Okay, what does sans mean there?
Without.
Right. So, dust into dust, what's that an echo of? In the Bible?
Dust to dust, ashes to ashes.
Right.
Literally, people are returned to the earth.
Yeah, you're made of dust. That is, Adam is formed of the dust of the ground. And unto dust thou shalt return. That's the curse in the Garden of Eden. So, yeah, we too will into dust descend. Turn into dust, lie under dust, without what we have now, wine, song, singer. That is the poet himself. And sans end, which means? Yeah, forever. Okay, Sam.
Alike for those for today prepare, and those that after tomorrow stare. Risen from the tower of darkness cries, fools, your reward is neither here nor there.
Okay, so what's a muezzin? Anyone know? It's the figure who calls to prayer, when you hear the call to prayer in Islamic cultures. So this figure is saying, is calling you to death, and says, you're not rewarded here because you're sinning, and you're not rewarded there because there's nothing. Red.
Why all the saints and sages who discussed of the two worlds so learnedly are thrust, like foolish prophets forth, their words to scorn are scattered, and their mouths are stopped with dust.
Yeah, so what happened to all the theologians, all the philosophers, all the people who explained how the other worlds went? Yeah, dead. Okay, Irina, what should we do?
Oh, come with old Chaim and leave the wise to talk. One thing is certain, that life flies. One thing is certain, and the rest is lies. The flower that once has blown forever dies.
Okay, what do you notice about that stanza?
It all rhymes.
Yeah. So there is a little bit, maybe you could feel, of a everything here you should take to heart. There isn't going to be this cycling back. It's just wise, leave the wise to talk. Life flies. The rest is lies. And the flower that once has blown. What does blown mean there? Do people know? It's one of those British words you talk about again. Yeah.
Yeah, is it when their spores spread?
Yeah, so you think it's a dandelion. It actually means blossom. So it's we think of dandelions and that it's the fading of the flower, but no, it's once it's blossomed, it will die forever. Intimations, though, to me, the meanest flower that blows gives rise to thoughts that lie too deep for tears. Last two lines of the Intimations Ode. Okay. Now he's going to say a little bit about himself. So, pick up.
Myself, when young, did eagerly frequent doctrine safe, and heard great argument about it and about, but evermore came out by the same door as in I left.
So what did he do as a young man?
He saw doctors and he saw them and he believed in his religion.
Yeah. Doctor there means PhDs, not MDs. It means people who are philosophical. So, yeah, he heard everything, but he went out the same door as he went in. Learned nothing, realizes now that it was pointless. Yeah, Leanne.
With them the seed of wisdom did I sow, and with my own hand labored it to grow. And this was all the harvest that I reaped. I came like water and like wind I go.
Okay, so all you learn is that you're born, that you die. Possibly a sexual description. I came like water. And then you die with your last breath, like wind I go. It doesn't have to be, but it could be. Julia?
Into this universe, and why not knowing, nor whence, like water willy-nilly flowing, and out of it as wind along the waste, I know not whither willy-nilly blowing.
Okay, good. So whence means what?
From where?
Yeah, so just to remind people, whence is short for from where, or is synonymous with from where, and whither is to where. So doesn't know where he comes from, doesn't know where he's going. Willy-nilly flowing, willy-nilly blowing. Do people know where what willy-nilly comes from? We think of it as meaning anarchic. It is etymologically will he, nil he. That is, the E part is a pronoun. And so it's whether he wants to or whether he doesn't want to. So if something happens willy-nilly, it means you have no control over it. Does he wish it, or does he wish against it? To nil is to will the opposite. Doesn't matter. Okay. What? Without asking, hither hurried whence? And without asking, whither hurried hence? Another cup to drown the memory of this impertinence. So that's pretty great that your being born is an impertinence done to you. you're being born as a mortal creature. Who did that to you? No one asked. I didn't ask to be born, is the standard modern version of this. So I was hurried here. Hither means to here, as whither means to where. I was hurried from where? And then being hurried to where? It's all impertinence. Give me some wine. Sophia.
Up from Earth's center through the seventh gate, I rose, and on the throne of Saturn sate, and many knots unraveled by the road, but not the knot of
yes.
Not the knot of human death and fate.
Yeah, so what's the little joke in not the knot?
I'm probably thinking the wrong thing, but like the thread of life that gets cut when you die.
Okay, good. And so that would be the knot of human death and fate. It could also be the puzzle of human death and fate. And I unraveled many knots. I understood many things by hanging out with the doctors and the saints, but not the knot of human death and fate. And you can also hear that that's kind of a knot. It's like those two words are knotted together. And he can't unravel it. He can't unravel the knot of human life and fate, hence it's not that knot, not the knot of human death and fate, excuse me. Sam.
There was a door to which I found no key. There was a veil past which I could not see. Some little talk of wild me and me there seemed, and there no more of thee and me.
Yeah, so that's life again. What do you notice again about the rhymes? Yeah, again. So always worth noticing where you're not making atonement for the end of the cadence or for the suspension of the cadence. So the door to which I found no key is the, and the veil past which I could not see. A door to what? What's being veiled?
The afterlife, yeah.
Or the secret of life, the meaning of life, which we can think of as the afterlife. We're often told the afterlife is the meaning of life. But he's saying, yeah, there's a door that I couldn't open, could never figure out the meaning of light, a veil that I couldn't see beyond. So what's life? Well, we talked of me and thee, and then that's going to be over, and then no more of thee and me. Not that we won't talk about it anymore, or we won't, because there'll be no more thee and me left. Just remember on your deathbed our discussion of thee and me today, and think, and then no more of that. Irina.
Then to the rolling heaven itself I cried, asking what lamp had destiny to guide for little children stumbling in the dark, and a blind understanding, heaven replied.
Yeah, so what can he learn from heaven? What lamp would help him go through earth? A blind understanding. Just keep going. You have no idea. It's all instinct. Here, maybe you can feel a little bit of Darwinian 19th century view of life. This is where he might sound a little Tennysonian. Quint.
Then to this earthen bowl did I adjourn. I left the secret well of life to learn. And lip to lip it murmured, while you live, drink.
Yeah, so he asks heaven for advice. Heaven says blind understanding. So who does he go to life? Who does he then look for the secret of life from? The earthen bowl filled with. What's he drinking?
Wine.
Yeah, alcohol. So heaven isn't going to answer him. So he asks a bowl full of alcohol. And it answers, drink, for once dead, you never shall return. Leon.
Okay. I think the vessel that was fugitive, articulation answered, once did live, and a merry make, and the cold lip I kissed, how many kisses might it take and give?
Okay, so what's the bowl made of?
Clay.
Clay, which comes from?
The earth.
Which is? Dead people. Yeah. So he's learning from the earthen bowl made of dead people. because everything is earth to earth, dust to dust, ash to ashes. Okay, Julia?
For in the marketplace, one dusk of day, I watched the potter thumping his wet clay, and with all its obliterated tongue, it murmured, "Gently, brother, gently, pray."
Yeah, so he's watching the potter making the earthenware. This is going to get more and more important as he thinks more and more of the pots that things are made of. Good. Ah, fill the cup. What boots it to repeat how time is slipping underneath our feet? Unborn tomorrow and dead yesterday, why fret about them, if today be sweet? So if this is the cup still talking, which it kind of could be, what is it that this earthen cup wants? Alcohol wants to be filled with wine. So the cup itself wants to be filled with wine. Sophia.
One moment in annihilation's waste, one moment of the well of light to taste. The stars are setting and the caravan starts for the dawn of nothing. Oh, make haste.
Okay, so nothing surprising there, maybe. Good advice, though. Sam.
How long, in infinite pursuit of this and that endeavor and dispute? Better be merry with a fruitful grape than sadder after none, or bitter fruit.
Yeah. Best fruit there is the grape. Red.
You know, my friends, how long since in my house, for a new marriage I did make carouse, divorced old barren reason from thy bed, and took the daughter of the vine to spouse.
Yeah, so a little bit like Meredith, he, as you'll see in Modern Love, he took up with someone else. Irina?
For is and is not, though with rule and line, and up and down with without I could define. I yet in all I only cared to know was never deep in anything but wine.
Yeah, so all this stuff he was supposed to learn, ontology, the geometry of the universe. All he wanted to know was wine. Let's just see. We won't be able to get to the Kusanama, but we'll do that on Monday. But let's get, we have time for a few more stanzas. So Quinn.
You know, my friends, how long since...
No. And lately.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. 42.
And lately by the tavern door gate came stealing through the dusk an angel shape. Bearing a vessel on his shoulder, and he bid me taste of it and bless the grape.
All right, so an angel told him to taste it, and it was great! Leon.
The grape that can was logic absolute, the 270 jarring sex confute, the subtle alchemist that in a trice life's leaden?
Uh-huh.
Life's leaden metal into gold transmute.
Yeah, so the grape is an alchemist that can turn the lead of life into gold. So that's really great.
The mighty Mahmud, the victorious lord, that all the misbelieving and black horde of fears and sorrows that infest the soul scatters and slays with his enchanted sword.
So great Sultan, the grape, gets rid of all the fears and sorrows. But leave the wise to wrangle. And with me, the quarrel of the universe, let be. And in some corner of the hubbub couched, make game of that which makes as much of thee. So we live in the hubbub. That's the universe. Let's go to some corner of the hubbub and make fun, make game, make fun of that which makes fun of you. Okay, a few more. Sophia.
Fan out above, about, below. Is nothing but a magic shadow show, played in a box whose candle is the sun, around which we phantom figures come and go.
Yeah, so it's just shadow puppets. That's all we are. Say again?
I said it's giving Plato in the cave.
Yes, yeah, good. Yeah. But there is no outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's just wine. Yeah. Sam.
And if the wine you drink, the lips be pressed, and nothing, all things end in. Yes, and fancy while thou art but what thou shalt be, nothing. Thou shalt be less.
Yes. Good. So if someone says, you're spending all your time drinking, it's completely pointless, you're going to come to nothing if you do that, the answer is, I'm going to come to nothing anyhow, because I'm a human being. So It's not going to hurt me. Red.
While the rose blows along the river bank, while old with old Kiam the ruby vintage drink, and when the angel with his darker draught draws up to thee, take that, do not shrink.
Yeah, so drink wine, and when the angel of death comes and gives you the drink of death, at least you had all this wine, so don't shrink away. Okay, why don't we stop here? We will finish it on Monday. And but keep reading. I hope we'll get a chance to we'll look at a couple of the sonnets from Modern Love. As I say, it's a fascinating and totally different kind of story. Oh, you knew it was the end.
You can hear people start to like zip up their bags.
I see, that's what it is.
Shuffle their papers, and that's his cue.
Okay, well, I get the hint. And what he is